In Chicago today, closing arguments at the trial of R&B superstar R. Kelly. He faces 14 counts of child pornography stemming from a video that surfaced in 2002. According to the prosecution, it shows Kelly having sex with a 13-year-old girl. The defense says it's not the girl the prosecution says it is, and that it isn't even R. Kelly. If convicted, Kelly could face 15 years in prison. If you have questions about this sensational case and the way it's been conducted, our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stephen Gray was in the courtroom today. He's been covering the trial for Time Magazine and for Time.com. Stephen, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
It's nice to be here, Neil. How are you?
And the case, as I understand it, has now gone to the jury.
That's right. I left the courtroom maybe 15 minutes ago, just as the judge was sort of giving the orders to the jury on how they are to deliberate the case. So presumably they are currently deliberating. So when I get back to the courtroom, I'll find out what's really happening.
And as I understand it, the prosecution in its closing arguments presented, People's Exhibit Number 1.
Right. We saw quite a bit of the tape in question, roughly 27 minutes of a man that the prosecution alleges is R. Kelly engaging in sex with a female that the prosecution says is was between 13 and 14 years old at the time, and it was a pretty extraordinary couple minutes or 27 or so minutes as the jurors and spectators and of course the attorneys and the judge watched all this stuff unfold.
And the defense, I would presume, said reasonable doubt.
Right. I mean, the defense is essentially challenging, first off, the veracity of the tape, because they point out a couple times in their closing arguments that they have throughout the case that the tape in question is a fourth or fifth generation of the original tape. They also point out that it's pretty tough burden for prosecutors to prove that it's R. Kelly in the tape for a variety of reasons. They also question whether or not this female in the video was even a child or a girl at the time of the sexual act and the taping. They also ask a very good question: why is it that the prosecution did not call this woman, this female, to testify? She lives in Chicago. She's here. Why not call her to testify? And that's something that it's something I'm sure a lot of jurors are going to be asking themselves.
They might ask themselves why the defense didn't call her either.
Well, right. Yes, exactly. I'm sorry. Yes, that's right. That's right. That's
and the defense, of course, we've read that she denies that she's the girl in the picture, in the film. Nevertheless, apparently they didn't think she would help them very much. Indeed, her members of her family, some of them testified for the prosecution and some for the defense.
Yeah, that's been another sort of tricky thing about this case, is that prosecutors have had to go in a very roundabout way of attempting to establish that the female in the video was, in fact, what's who they say she is, in a nutshell. So it's been everything about this case, including the roundabout way that prosecutors had to go about establishing this, that this female was in the tape. It's been pretty bizarre.
And we've also seen testimony by, I guess, one of the most best-known private detectives in the country.
That's right. I mean, you've seen testimony from a lot of different people, Neil, and I think, there's just lots of questions raised about lots of people who've been called to testify.
And one of them was Mr. DeRogatis of the Chicago Sun-Times, the man who originally got the tape.
That's right. Jim DeRogatis, he's the Chicago Sun-Times' music critic, and he is a guy who initially received the tape back in 2002, I believe. He was called to testify, but invoked the Fifth Amendment, so essentially he did not, he didn't actually testify from the stand. So.
He tried to argue first that he was not required to under the Shield Law, but they said they weren't asking him about sources.
That's right. That's exactly right, Neil.
And then he said, well, I could be charged by being in possession of child pornography, if that's what this is, so I'll plead the Fifth.
That's right. And you also have to keep in mind that this tape has been widely circulated, first off, on the Internet, and also sold on street corners across the country. So lots of people have this tape and, potentially, expose themselves to child pornography.
We're talking with Stephen Gray of Time Magazine and Time.com about the R. Kelly trial. The case is in the hands of the jurors. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Catherine on the line. Catherine calling us from Kansas City.
Hi, I just wanted to find out why it took so long for the case to go to trial, because it happened so long ago that it just seems like now it's any evidence they had is irrelevant. And I can take my comment off the air, thanks.
Okay, Catherine.
That's a really good question. As Catherine points out, the charges were first filed back in June of 2002, and the case has dragged on for seemingly bizarre reasons. Just last December, R. Kelly failed to make a scheduled court appearance because his tour bus was stopped speeding by Utah authorities, and he couldn't make it to court the next day. One time, Judge Gahan, the presiding judge, he fell off a ladder and hurt himself, so he was out for a while. Another time, one of the prosecutors had a baby, so that also caused another postponement. So for a variety of reasons, this case has been postponed for, has basically been held up for the last 6 years.
We mentioned that the alleged victim in this case, the young lady who was said to have been on that video, she didn't testify. Well, neither did R. Kelly either.
Well, that's a good question, and that's a very good question. It's important to point out that in a deposition, when this case first broke, the alleged victim in the case said that she was not on the person in the video, and that she also never engaged in sexual act with R. Kelly. It's unclear precisely why R. Kelly was not called to testify, although the presiding judge did make clear that he's got a constitutional right to to defend himself from the stand. And it's also important to point out that R. Kelly, that is, has pled not guilty.
Of course, he pleaded not guilty. There was also a lot of forensic evidence, and looking at the tape, I gather over the question of, was that dot a mole, similar to a mole on the back of R. Kelly, or was it just a piece of junk that ended up somehow on the videotape?
Yeah, that's something that's been sort of debated between prosecutors and defense attorneys over the last couple of weeks, whether or not this mole that appears in some scenes in this 27-minute video was in fact a mole on R. Kelly's back, or was it, video noise? And I think one expert described it. And I don't think that's been completely resolved yet.
As you looked at the jurors throughout this, about a month-long case now, can you get any read from them about what their interests are, about how engaged they are in this case?
Sure. I mean, the first week that I was in the courtroom full time, and certainly today, both times that I saw the tape being the 27-minute video tape that is being showed, I think there was a fairly mix of emotions. The woman I saw, a middle-aged African-American woman whose husband is a fairly prominent pastor here in Chicago. She at various points during both the first showing of the tape, but also the showing today, she looked down in obvious disgust. And today, at one point, I saw her taking off her glasses and just putting it down on her lap. And she just looked down for a couple seconds. It was so clear that she was obviously disgusted. But I think jurors who, took meticulous notes, at various points throughout the trial, whenever the tape was shown, they, a lot of times they stopped. I mean, it's a very jarring sort of thing to watch. So it would be interesting to see how they rule.
Somebody who's been watching this, you have any thoughts about which way they may go?
It's really hard to say. I mean, I think it's going to be very, very, very tricky.
As you looked at that tape in that courtroom and then looked at the defendant, did that look like R. Kelly on the tape?
Ooh, I don't know if I'm not in a position to answer that question. I think it looks like him, but, it's a tough question for me to answer, I think. As a reporter.
As a reporter, I understand that, but I was just asking as an observer. And also, has the circus atmosphere, last time you were on, you talked about all the people around the courtroom, has that ebbed a little bit?
That's a good question. Today, the courtroom was certainly the fullest I've seen in the days that I've been on the case, and it was pretty much filled to capacity today. I mean, the spectators prosecutor's portion of the courtroom was absolutely full to capacity. Many of the young African American women who were there when the case first started, the women who took off days from work, took off days from school in order to attend the R. Kelly trial, they were back again today. And it definitely had the feel of a circus. I think that was a very good description of it. So the whole thing's been pretty bizarre, Neil.
Stephen Gray, thanks very much, and we'll let you get back in the event of a verdict.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Stephen Gray has been covering the R. Kelly trial for Time Magazine and Time.com. Again, the case is now in the hands of the jury at the Cook County Courthouse in Chicago. Tomorrow it's Science Friday, and guest host Joe Palca will be here. We'll see you again on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.